The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests, and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
One of the most remarkable aspects of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is its unique history. Throughout the world, great stories from faithful church members have only added to that history. This program shares some of these incredible stories of faith, perseverance, hope, and inspiration. You're listening to Legacy. I'm your host, Nathan Wright. While living near his in-laws in Harmony, Pennsylvania, Joseph Smith Jr. met his wife, received priesthood authority, buried his first child, translated much of the Book of Mormon, and received his first written revelations. Recent research by the Historic Sites Group of the Church History Department has uncovered additional insights into this critical period of early Latter-day Saint history that sheds light on Isaac and Elizabeth Hale's family and Joseph Smith's experiences while living near them. In studio today is Mark Staker. For the last 16 years, Mark has worked as a curator in the Church History Museum, has helped create numerous exhibits covering such subjects as Joseph Smith, Prophet of the Restoration, the history of the welfare program, and the history of the church among Native Americans. He has done joint exhibits with several institutions, including the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Mark served as the historian for several historic sites projects and spent over 10 years in full-time study of the history of the Latter-day Saints in Kirtland, Ohio, to assist in the restoration of the historic Kirtland Village. More recently, he has spent several years studying the restoration as it unfolded in Harmony, Pennsylvania. And welcome, Mark. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's discuss Harmony, Pennsylvania. It seems to be something that you love to talk about, and it's something that I think a lot of church members don't have a true understanding of. So tell us why Harmony, Pennsylvania is important to church history and to members of the church.
I think you're right that many Latter-day Saints don't understand Harmony, Pennsylvania well. And often when we read church history, those writing that history skip over Harmony because it's a complex story and it's not well understood. But Harmony, Pennsylvania plays an important role in the history of the church. Primarily, it's the place where Emma Hale grew up, Joseph's wife, Emma Hale Smith. But it also is the place where a lot of important events in early church history took place. Harmony becomes important because the Hale family moves there. Isaac Hale settles in Harmony in 1787 and buys a small farm and then goes back to Vermont where he spent his childhood and marries a young woman there, Elizabeth Lewis, who then comes down with him and they settle in Harmony and establish a household. And a number of Elizabeth's relatives also come down and settle in the valley with them. So the Susquehanna Valley that stretches along the Susquehanna River as it goes through the Allegheny Mountains becomes the home for many of of Emma Hale's relatives. And she grows up there in a nurturing environment where she becomes interested in religion and interested in the normal things that young ladies at that time do. I think that most Latter-day Saints don't realize how tight-knit the Hale family was. And Isaac and Elizabeth Hale raised a large family that settled around them. All of their children lived close initially in the same valley. Some of them lived right next door or just across the river. Others lived only a few miles away. And so the family was very close when Joseph Smith first arrived in the valley.
Let's go back just a little bit to when they first settled there. Give us some kind of an idea of what the area looked like perhaps when Isaac Hale arrived.
When Isaac Hale first arrived in the valley, there were some Native American communities settled along the river, but most of them had been forced out by the British during the Revolutionary War. And so there was very little occupation in the valley at the time. Sylvia Dubois, a slave that lived in the valley at the same time as the Hale family, said that when she first arrived, that she traveled for 6 miles before she even saw anybody, that it was very sparsely settled and mostly just log cabins or rough dwellings of various kinds. So when Isaac and Elizabeth settled in Harmony, they were in remote circumstances. There was very little except for what they produced themselves that was available. However, they lived right by the Susquehanna River. And the Susquehanna River became one of the major highways in America. Most of the goods traveling from New York and even from up further north down to Philadelphia and to Baltimore and other regions down south went down on the Susquehanna River. And there were a lot of people going down the river. And so to an extent, it became a cosmopolitan atmosphere. The Hale family was exposed to a lot of people and a lot of ideas as individuals came down through their valley on the river. And at the same time, there was a lot of movement north. Cattle drivers would use the road that went right across their front. Cattle drivers would use the road that went in front of their home to go north, taking cattle up to Albany, New York, and other locations. And so they had a lot of traffic going north as well. And the Hale family interacted with a lot of people.
When Isaac purchased the land for his original spread, so to say, how did that happen, and was it on the level, so to speak?
That's an interesting question. For most of us, we think that the United States was a settled location and that all the states understood their boundaries and that everybody knew who owned what when early settlers came to this country. That was not the case. And there was a boundary dispute. Both Pennsylvania and Connecticut claimed portions of the land in northern Pennsylvania. And so when Isaac and Elizabeth Hale came, they purchased land through Connecticut, which is where Isaac Hale's family had originally come from and where he was born. And because of that, it created some problems down the road. Eventually, Pennsylvania was given that land, and they lost ownership of their property. And because of that, they had to turn around and buy their land a second time. And a lot of other individuals in the valley that had settled by them were forced to leave, including Isaac Hale's brother-in-law, Elizabeth Hale's brother Nathaniel Lewis, who lived right next door to the Hale family. He lost his property and had to move across the street or across the river, which was like a street, and settle on some poor land that didn't produce well. And so the family struggled from that point on. The Hale family was set back, too, by this experience because, naturally, if you had to buy your land a second time, it made it more difficult for you. However, they still did well financially. Although they lived in a log cabin initially and lived in modest circumstances, they were able to get together enough means to build quite a large home. That was impressive to those who visited and was substantial for the time.
With most of their neighbors having to be forced off in this repurchase of the lands, Isaac must have been doing something that allowed him to keep it. What did he actually do?
Well, he was not only a farmer like his neighbors, but he also did a lot of hunting. And he was situated along the river in such a way that he had a ready market for his meat. So he would go up into the Allegheny Mountains and hunt primarily deer and elk and some other game animals, and then he would ship the preserved meat from those animals down the river and sell it in Philadelphia, and got a very good income from doing that, which paid well and allowed him to do more things than his neighbors.
As I understand it, part of the process that he used to preserve this meat was some kind of an Indian technique. How did he learn that, and what was his relationship with the local Native Americans?
Isaac Hale seems to have had a closer relationship with the Native American community than perhaps most of his neighbors. That's one of the things that drew him to the region. There was a large massacre of Indians that the British had carried out during the Revolutionary War. And Isaac Hale found himself, after that event, down in the village where they had been massacred. And he met up with another individual who was in that village as well. And they both went together down into Harmony, where they found property that they wanted to settle. Archaeology has produced Native American artifacts that were on the Hale land. We don't know exactly when people were living on that property, but perhaps as recent as around the time that Isaac Hale settled the land, and he would have traded with the Native American community in the valley, and so he had a working relationship with the Indians of the Susquehanna Valley. There was a method of building large troughs where they would take bark and build almost like canoes that Isaac, as he killed his game, the wild game, he would cut the meat up during the wintertime or late fall or early winter when the animals were still when the animals still had a lot of meat on them. He would cut that meat up, put it in these large troughs, and then salt the meat so that it could be preserved all winter long. And then in the early spring, he would pull those troughs down and ship the meat down the river.
Let's talk about Emma as a child and some of the circumstances in the area that made her as religious as she was, even as a child.
It's difficult to get a really good picture of Isaac and Elizabeth Hale's religious sentiments because family members disagreed about some of the details. But Elizabeth Lewis's family became some of the first Methodists in Vermont when Methodism moved into the region in the late 1700s, or the middle 1700s. And she, however, did not join the church, join the Methodist church when her family did. She remained aloof from religious involvement. And Isaac Hale appears also to have been fairly skeptical about religion. When they moved into Harmony, they were fairly isolated from religious activity. Isaac Hale's good friend that had moved down in the valley with him, Daniel Buck, became a Presbyterian minister in the region, and that was the only religious congregation there was. So when Emma Hale was born, they took her to his congregation and had her baptized as an infant, and had a number of her siblings baptized at the time as well. But that appears to be the only real religious activity that the family had. They seem to have remained fairly distant from involvement. Then a couple of Methodist ministers came through the valley, particularly Timothy Ashe, who held revival meetings in their valley. And the family was drawn to Methodism. Nathaniel Lewis, Emma Hale's uncle, became he became a preacher at the time. He wasn't ordained, but he became intimately involved in Methodism at that time. But Isaac Hill appears to have stayed still fairly aloof, depending on how you understand what the family members were saying at that time. Emma, however, became very much involved in Methodism. She was active in class meetings, and she became a missionary for Methodism at the time, even though she was quite young. When she was 7 or 8 years old, she was out in the woods and shouting Methodists, which was primarily what they were, encouraged individuals to go out into the woods and pray to God and seek inspiration from Him. And she was doing just that. And as she was praying out loud on behalf of her father, who wasn't religious. And he, as a hunter, was out in the woods looking for game, and came across her praying and heard her praying on his behalf, and that touched his heart to such an extent that he became a Christian, and he became active in the Methodist congregation as well. And so the family, by and large, became Methodist, in part due to Emma's own religious interests.
So what brought Joseph Smith Jr. to the area, and how did how did Joseph and Emma meet?
Joseph Smith Jr. and his father, Joseph Smith Sr., were invited to come down to Harmony to help look for a Spanish silver mine. Now, this time, they were trying to make a payment on their house and property, and were struggling to try to make ends meet. And they were offered good money to go down and help find this silver mine. It's not really clear who was all involved in this, but Josiah Stoll played a significant role. He apparently had a map of some kind that that led them to believe that the Spanish had abandoned a silver mine in the area. Now, further down the Susquehanna River, where the river enters Pennsylvania a second time, in exactly the same location where Harmony is, there is a spot called Spanish Hill. And it was called Spanish Hill from the early 1700s. The tradition was that the Spaniards had settled there and interacted with Native Americans, and there may have been some thought of them having been involved in mining there as well. And archaeology has indicated that, archaeologists have uncovered a number of items, including a silver cross and other things that left by early French or Spanish settlers that suggest that perhaps they had been involved there somewhat. But if they were looking for that location, they were looking in the wrong spot, because they were looking in Harmony instead of by Spanish Hill. But Josiah Stoll had a map of some kind and was working with other individuals, including Oliver Harper, whose father, Judge George Harper, had been digging for Native American gold and other items up north in Broome County, New York. And the Hale family was involved in this in some way, although the digging took place on their neighbor's property. Joseph McCune was apparently heavily involved in this effort as well. And Isaac Hale provided a place for these workers to sleep and to live while they worked there. The Hale family had a good-sized home, but they also had a log cabin on their property that was still standing at the time where they had initially settled. And that property, that log cabin was also available for people to stay in, and that might be where the family had let these workers stay. Joseph was in the area for only a short period of time until, according to his own recollection, he had convinced Josiah Stoll to give up the effort, that it just wasn't worthwhile for him to continue to look for the Spanish silver mine and that they weren't going to find it. But while he was just there briefly, he was immediately struck by Emma. And he told his mother that he was going to marry her. At that time, some people asked permission for marriage. And Joseph appears to have been part of that conservative, more respectful element of their society, because he went home and specifically asked his parents for permission to marry Emma before he courted her in earnest. And then he returned back down to Harmony and asked for her hand in marriage. Isaac Hill rejected him. Some of the reasons were that, some of the reasons that Isaac Hill later gave as to why he didn't want Joseph to marry Emma were that he didn't know him well. He was a stranger, he called him, and that he didn't approve of his occupation because he'd been involved in this silver digging mine. But Joseph nevertheless was persistent and continued to court Emma. At that time, he also got a job working for Josiah Stoll just over the border in Broome County, New York, and continued to work for Mr. Stoll while he courted Emma. He was able to borrow a sleigh from other individuals and go down and visit Emma from time to time, but it was quite an effort for Joseph to go each way because it was a good distance and would have taken him most of the day to travel down and visit with her. Emma had a sister who lived up north in Broome County near Colesville, and she went to visit that sister one day and stopped off at the Josiah Stoll home, perhaps to visit with Josiah Stoll's daughters. He had a couple of daughters there that were living with him at the time. And Josiah Stoll and Joseph Smith, who was there, both importuned Emma, is the word that she used, to marry Joseph. And she finally consented. And they were married just down the road at Judge Zachariah Tarbell's home. And after the marriage, Josiah Stoll helped them go up to Joseph's parents' home where they settled. So Emma didn't return to her family, and they eloped. Now, Joseph suggests in his own account of these events that he had initially planned on marrying Emma at her parents' home, which was customary at the time. That's where you usually got married, was at the home of the bride. So this was a change of plans for them. And it's not clear if Emma let her family know what she had done or if she just let them wonder. But I like to believe that she let them know that she had married Joseph, because they clearly a few months later knew that she was up in New York and that she was married to him.
So based on Isaac Hale's refusal when Joseph asked for Emma's hand, traditionally there seems to be quite a strained relationship between Isaac Hale and Joseph Smith Jr. Once the marriage had taken place, they eloped and went away. Was this something that continued through the marriage of Joseph and Emma?
You know, it's hard to really judge Joseph's relationship with his in-laws. He seems to have felt that they had a good relationship, And there are some later letters by one of Joseph's brothers-in-law that suggests that they thought highly of him and had a good relationship as well. However, there is one affidavit that Isaac Hill apparently produced that seems very critical of Joseph. And Joseph doesn't seem to think that he had actually produced that, which suggests that either if he had produced it, that the relationship changed over time and that Joseph thought that they had a better relationship than they did, or that other people had encouraged him or encouraged Isaac or had taken advantage of Isaac in producing that affidavit. But they seem to have had at least a cordial relationship. When Joseph and Emma were married, Isaac asked them to come back down and live in Harmony. Later on in the census, Joseph Smith gives Harmony as his place of residence and not New York, not Palmyra, Manchester. He seems very tied to that area and thinks of that as home. And not only does Isaac invite them to come back down, but he makes the very best spot of land available for Joseph and Emma that they have. At that same time, Isaac's oldest son, Alva Hill, is renting a farm down the road at the other end of the valley. And Joseph and Emma are able to live right next to the family on prime land, and Isaac sells that land to Joseph. There is strong pressure for Joseph to meet payments and to pay for the land, and he struggles to do that and gets help from others to pay for that land. But Isaac does make that land available to him.
just in case people have joined us late, we're visiting with Mark Staker, a curator for the Church History Museum and a creator of numerous exhibits covering church history. And we're talking today about Harmony, Pennsylvania, and its importance in church history. And let's continue on. James Fenimore Cooper has often placed Harmony in this area in some of his writings. Why is that, and what is that significant?
James Fenimore Cooper grew up along the Susquehanna River at the north end of the river in New York. And when he began writing his novels about American life, he focused on life along the Susquehanna River. And so much of what he writes about really captures the Hale family. He doesn't write about them directly. He creates fictional characters. But I like reading his material because it provides insights into daily life and into the thought process and the experiences that the Hale family probably shared.
Very interesting. He created a character that you associated with Isaac Hale. Which one was that?
Natty Bumppo, which is Leatherstocking, you know, as he writes his Leatherstocking tales, is kind of a precursor to the Mountain Man. You know, he wears a Native American element sometimes, you know, fringed leather, and he likes to hunt deer, be outdoors, and so in my mind, Natty Bumppo is very much an Isaac Hale kind of character. They share a lot in common, which suggests to me that Natty Bumppo is not as fictional. He's a fictional character, but he's not as fictional as we might like to believe, that he really captures an element of life along the river, including that of Isaac Hale's family.
I understand the construction of the Erie Canal may have had an effect on the settlements around Harmony. Why would that have been?
Well, the Erie Canal, when the canal goes in through Palmyra, New York, you know, on out to Lake Erie, a lot of goods then start moving along the canal back and forth from the west to the east rather than going south along the river where they did beforehand. But It really has very little impact on travel along the river because they're two completely different routes. And so there's still a lot of goods that go down south along that river.
So let's get back to Joseph and Emma. They marry, they leave for a time, and they come back and move into a home very, very near the Hales. There is some tradition that say this was a little log cabin or maybe even a tool shed. But what is some of the evidence that we have that may refute that?
Well, Isaac and Elizabeth Hale had one of their sons living next to them on a portion of their property. And Jesse Hale married Mary McCune, a neighbor girl. And so they settled right between both families on a small area of property. And they appear to be the ones who built a small home that was on that land. We've done archaeology on the site and can't date construction of the home with that kind of precision with archaeology, but you can get a sense of the approximate time period that it was constructed. And it looks like the home was built about 1825 when Joseph first arrived in the area, which is also about the time that Jesse Hale was married. It was a really nice home for its size. It was small, only a main level and a half story above. Not a lot of room for Jesse and Mary Hale, who had five children, but it was ideal for Joseph and Emma, who were newly married and didn't have any children in the home at the time. So the research that we've done on that area, looking at early photographs of Joseph and Emma's home, doing archaeology and looking at the landscape, suggests that the home was quite comfortable, particularly for the, you know, being newly married and not having a lot of resources, that Isaac and Elizabeth made a comfortable home available to Joseph and Emma.
Speaking of the evidence of some of these structures there, I understand there was a story of a missionary who had served in the Harmony area and had actually found some evidence from the Hale home that turned out to be quite significant eventually.
Oh, yes, during the 1950s, the Isaac and Elizabeth Hale. Well, let me step back just to put this in context. Isaac and Elizabeth Hale built a very nice home in the area. Lucy Mack Smith, when she saw the home, she indicated in her later historical account that it was, she called it a mansion. And you know, they didn't have as nice a home up in Manchester, New York as this, but it's probably not a mansion as we would see that today. It was a two-story structure, but substantial in size. And that home continued after Isaac and Elizabeth Hale left the area, or after they died and their children moved away. The home was sold to others, and they lived into it. But a tradition for some time had been that the home burned down in the 1870s and that another structure was built on the site. And so we assumed that there were no photographs of the home and that we didn't know anything about what Joseph and Emma's home looked like. However, as we were doing research, trying to understand the property and see what we could do about better interpreting Harmony, Pennsylvania for the church, there was a missionary who had served in the area in the 1950s when the home that had been on the property had fallen down and was being carted off and the site was buried up. And he said, well, I removed these trunnels from the structure. And a trunnel is a big wooden nail, usually about 8 inches, 10 inches long, and maybe about an inch in diameter. And he had removed these trunnels from the property and said, you know, are they significant? And as I looked at those, I thought, you know, that is 1820s or earlier construction. That's not 1870s construction. They weren't using big wooden nails like that. Later, when the home was supposedly rebuilt, because of that, we went back and looked at the early photographs, and we looked at all the information that we could gather, and it became clear that we had overlooked a lot of little details, that the home actually had survived pretty much intact. The superficial structure had been remodeled. You know, the chimney had been moved. They changed the plate location of the fireplace and enlarged the windows and added a nice front entrance to the building. But primarily it was the same large elongated box shape of families typically lived in at the time. And so from that we concluded that the Hale home had survived up to the 1950s primarily intact. And we were able to learn a lot from going back to photographs and trying to understand the nature of that home. And so that it was serendipitous that this individual had those trunnels, but that put us on a whole different line of thinking that allowed us to reconstruct somewhat what the home looked like.
Now, we know that some of the translation of the Book of Mormon took place in Harmony at this home that you described was comfortable for Joseph and Emma. Some people believe that the translation may have taken place in the upper half level where it was dark and there were no windows and perhaps more private. But what evidence is there against that?
Well, the first-hand accounts of the translation process in the home suggest that translation took place in the kitchen where there was a lot of light. It was the main level. They could open the door and let air flow in. One account suggests that they hung a quilt up on the door, you know, so people couldn't look in. Another suggests that some of Emma's relatives were hollering rude things in through the doorway, so they may have hung the quilt up to kind of avoid that a little bit while the process took place. But for a modest family like theirs, candles were quite expensive. You only burn those when you absolutely needed to. And the upstairs wouldn't have had fireplace light or candles or other things easily for them to work. It was a place to sleep. And so all of the details together suggest that the translation took place primarily on the main floor in the kitchen. Emma even mentions that that the plates were wrapped in her tablecloth that lay there on the kitchen table, and that as she cleaned up in the kitchen, she moved the plates around during the process and thumbed the pages, much like you would a book, through the tablecloth, although she never was allowed to look at the plates themselves.
Joseph and Emma had their first child in Harmony, and it died, of course. But was this a singular event based on the area and the time?
Joseph and Emma were undoubtedly, in my mind at least, excited, you know, when they're expecting their first child, as most parents are, and looked forward to that event. Joseph was working on the translation of the Book of Mormon at the time. And reading carefully the accounts of that process suggests that while Emma was expecting, she continued to help as his scribe for part of that time. But Martin Harris was a scribe for much of that time, particularly at near the end of Emma's term for her pregnancy. But looking carefully at the data, we find that a lot of people started dying in the valley beginning at the beginning in January of 1828. And so as Emma was expecting her child, there are a lot of people dying around them, particularly Hale family members. There's a little niece of hers that dies, and a brother of a brother-in-law of hers that dies, and then some neighbors of theirs that die. And there's an unusual spike in the number of deaths. Usually there's one death a year in their part of the valley, or sometimes none, you know, and rarely two. But there are six deaths within just a few short months right in their neighborhood. And these all occur right before Emma delivers her child. Joseph Smith describes her as being very ill. And we assume that that's right after the delivery, but it may have begun right before as well. We don't know exactly what kind of illness she had or how that impacted her child, but it appears that the infant was stillborn. A woman who was at the delivery said, today we think of that term meaning that the child was born dead, but at that time, a stillborn was a medical term that meant that the child was born living, or one of its meanings was that the child was born living but didn't cry, that was listless and not responsive. And Lucy Mack Smith says that the child was born alive but died shortly after birth. This all suggests that perhaps that illness that was going through the valley that led to all these people dying also led to the death of Joseph and Emma's child.
So an epidemic almost is what it sounds like.
Probably an epidemic through the valley of some type.
We always think about, you know, a young mother, her first child, and perhaps it was premature or something like that. But this evidence suggests that it was more associated with this epidemic.
Yes, I think it was. And it was a difficult experience for the young family. And deaths then were fairly expensive as well, like they are today to respond to. It would cost a couple of dollars for you to hire somebody to dig the grave, unless you did that yourself, and Joseph may have done that. But the headstone is made by the same manufacturer of a lot of headstones up in Broome County, New York. The same materials, the same writing style, the same person writing the text on them. And this suggests that somebody in Broome County, New York, provided that headstone for Joseph and Emma, and probably some of the early members of the church there had done this as a gift to Joseph and Emma to memorialize their child. Now, we often think of that child as having been named, and in later records, the child was given a name, but it wasn't customary at that time to name a child immediately, and especially if they died shortly after birth, they weren't given a name. And on the headstone, it doesn't have a name. It just says the infant of Joseph and Emma Smith, and then provides a date of death. And so it's most likely that the child wasn't named at the time, but was just assigned a name later on by other individuals.
Thank you. One of the most significant events in church history, the restoration of the Aaronic priesthood, took place here in Harmony. We associate that with a beautiful, bright spring day with lots of trees as Joseph and Oliver go toward the river and pray and receive the vision and baptize each other, all within, you know, a very short period of time. What do you believe it was really like?
Well, the data suggests that it was still somewhat cold in the area and rained quite a bit. The day, 2 days before, the day before the Joseph and Oliver received the priesthood, there's a wedding held on the neighboring property. So it's the weather's tolerable that you can get out and do things. But there's the garden journals of that time where farmers kept detailed information about when they planted their crops, what the weather was like, you know, on each day, suggests that it was still cold and rainy in May of 1829, and especially around the 15th of May. And Joseph and Oliver appear to have already determined beforehand that baptism was important and that they needed to respond to what they had read in the translation of the Book of Mormon as they were working. Both accounts suggest that they went to the woods to pray, or the bush to pray. Both accounts, meaning that Joseph and Hiram, independently each, as they told about these events, suggest that they went to the woods, which were on the north end of the property. Joseph had a maple grove where they could get maple sugar from, and it was likely there that they went to pray. And reading carefully the text suggests that they stood, probably because the ground was muddy, because it's only afterwards that they kneel down, so they likely stood to pray. And as they were praying, John the Baptist came and gave them authority to baptize each other. And then he says, "Go and be baptized." And so they would have then gone down to the river to baptize each other in the Susquehanna River. But keep in mind that the Susquehanna River at that time is one of America's major highways. And records that were kept during that week of shipments being made down the river suggest that hundreds of boats would have been going down the river during midday. It would have been many hundreds of boats. And so there would have been no opportunity to find the river vacant at that time. You would have always had a boat either, you know, at the north end of the river coming down towards them, or down a little further south back up. And so if they wanted privacy, they would have had to have waited until later in the evening, which they may have done. Joseph and Oliver them baptize each other and confirm each other members of the church.
Based on the practice of the Methodists and others, I'm sure, at the time of going out to the woods to pray, and it being a common thing, would it be impossible to think that they were baptizing one another and there was lots of traffic? I mean, it wasn't a unthinkable thing for maybe a boat to go by and see a couple of guys in the river baptizing one another.
Absolutely. Yeah, they could have baptized each other with the boats there, and people would have recognized that as just a normal activity, because Methodists, not all Methodists, but many Methodists baptized adults, and Baptists, of course, did in other congregations as well. And so there were baptisms that took place in that river by other people.
Is there something, let's say, what is the thing that members need to know most about Harmony and the history of the church that you would say?
Harmony plays a more significant role in the church than I think we are inclined to recognize. We either think of it as solely the place where the Aaronic priesthood was restored, or the Aaronic priesthood was restored and some of the Book of Mormon translation took place. But Harmony is really where Joseph Smith learns to be a prophet. Not only through the translation process of the Book of Mormon, through receiving authority to lead the church, but he learns to receive revelation. That's where the first revelations that he dictates as a prophet come from. And he learns that process of being the mouthpiece of the Lord in harmony. And so really everything that we have built on as the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints rests on what took place in harmony. The Book of Mormon, having a prophetic voice, provide direction, and having proper authority.
Which is truly significant, so thank you. Right. We've been visiting with Mark Staker, a curator for the Church History Museum and historian for several historic site projects over the years. Thank you very, very much for being with us today, Mark.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Legacy. I'm Nathan Wright.